This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Studies are still being conducted, but research has shown that poor diet and not being active are two key factors that can increase a person's cancer risk. But can lifestyle changes, nutrition, and dietary supplements prevent and possibly treat cancer? Joining us to discuss what research says about the connection between nutrition and cancer are Dr. Rekha Chaudhary, Assistant Professor in the Department of Internal Medicine, Division of Hematology Oncology at the University of Cincinnati, and member of the UC Cancer Institute and UC Brain Tumor Center. Tammy Ward, registered dietitian and specialist in oncology nutrition for the UC Cancer Institute, and Susie DeYoung, head chef and owner of La Soupe. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Good afternoon, everybody.
Good afternoon.
Susie, what does the research show in terms of the link between diet and physical activity and cancer? What is that connection?
So those are two separate questions. Mm-hmm. But for exercise, even in really hard to treat cancers, there's been shown a survival benefit with exercise. For instance, brain cancers, which are very difficult to treat, fairly resistant to chemotherapy. There's been an actual survival benefit shown with patients that walk 30 minutes a day for 7 days a week. So you don't have to be a marathon runner. You don't have to, be doing hardcore aerobic exercise. A little bit of exercise, and it has actually shown a statistically significant survival benefit, which we have not accomplished in brain tumors with any kind of other drugs, any chemotherapy.
Really? So there's a treatment aspect to this.
That's exactly right. And that's what I like to tell my patients, that, sometimes people talk about diet and exercise and wellness and just things to make you feel better and help you cope with the chemotherapy or help you cope with the treatment. But what they sometimes ignore, and physicians ignore, that there's actually a treatment effect to putting diet as a pharmacotherapy.
And then the connection between physical activity and cancer, and there's a connection between diet and cancer, so diet plays an important role as well. Tammy, has that been your experience?
Absolutely. What we put in our mouth actually serves a purpose in our body to provide key nutrients, not only to prevent DNA damage that can lead to the formation of cancers, but for those folks that are going through active chemotherapy, they have deficiencies that develop, nutritional deficiencies that develop because of the treatments. So when you eat the foods that have vitamins, minerals, all of those nutrients that are important, they heal and repair faster, they tolerate their treatment better, that allows them to then receive all of their cancer treatments without becoming deconditioned, and that's what's best for their treatment.
Susie, did you want to weigh in on that?
Just that I think what we try to do at La Soupe is have access to the type of foods that we've been talking about, or, just having nutritionally sound food is an option for patients where they're undergoing the chemo. So it provides a place that doctors can recommend that, yes, she has the bone broth, yes, she has lemon ginger, she has the different nutrients available to help people. So we see quite a few people coming through that need help through their treatment.
Rekha, who was it that said, let your food be your medicine, let your medicine be your food? Was that Hippocrates?
Hippocrates.
So there's a lot of truth in that.
I think so. And I think that, one of the deficiencies in our medical education, Tammy and I were talking about this the other day, is that physicians are never taught to write a prescription for diet. We're taught how to write a prescription, just like in grade school, you're taught how to write a check, where to put the bank memo, what to put in the number. And we're taught how to write a prescription for drugs. But we're never taught how to prescribe a diet when a patient needs help. And because of that, sometimes it is hard for us to intrinsically accept that as a modality of therapy.
That's very true, because how often do you hear a doctor say, eat healthier,
right?
Eat more fresh fruits and vegetables. What does that exactly mean, Tammy?
Right.
I mean, that's kind of a broad description, isn't it?
That's a great question. And part of the role of an oncology dietitian is to help put that into practice, is to work with patients to find out, first of all, what their barriers are to eating as they go through their treatments, and then to find foods that best fit some of those barriers. Susie, some of the foods that she just mentioned, the lemon ginger. Ginger is known for its effect in reducing effects of nausea in cancer patients. So it's just one of the things that we do nutritionally to really key in on some of those problems that patients are going through that we're uniquely qualified to manage.
And I think one of the things that Susie can offer us, and she can speak more to this, but, you know, when you have cancer, you're very tired. There's a lot of, you know, fatigue with the chemotherapy, maybe has some other side effects, and you may not feel like coming home and cooking a healthy meal. You know, you may feel like just putting some macaroni and cheese in the microwave. And so it's kind of a double-edged sword. On one hand, you should be eating healthier than you've ever eaten. But on the other hand, it's harder to go to the grocery store and pick up the fresh food that you need. So maybe that's where, you know, Chef Susie can come in and help with some healthy meals that you maybe don't have to put the work into.
And that's what we try to have, at least one or two items on the menu every day that people can come in. And we had somebody this morning who, you know, came in and just needed some ginger broth that she was going back for her chemo. And it's not a hard thing to make, but like you said, it's hard when you're sick. That's the last thing you want to do is cook, you know?
Susie, you work with what, anti-inflammatory is what you're trying to specialize in?
And okay. It's kind of a twofold thing that we do at Less Soup. I mean, it's really about just getting people to eat healthier. And I chose soup as the method because part of it is, it doesn't pertain to the topic today, but we do rescue produce from local grocery stores that otherwise would be going to waste and try to turn that into healthy soups to feed not only all of us, but we have a one-for-one give, so we're trying to give kids especially a nutritional base, especially the kids in the poverty and the kids that aren't eating except at the school lunches. So even tomorrow we're assembling 100 quarts, I hope, of soup to go down to Euler Elementary. And we're going to try to put together power packs all by donation to give these kids something on the weekend other than processed food. So
when we talk about an anti-inflammatory diet, what exactly is that?
Well, I mean, there's different thoughts on it. You know, it's really hard to conduct true science with food because, for instance, if you have a chemotherapy drug, you give it to half the patients and the other half of the patients don't receive it, and then you measure what the drug does to the cancer, right? It's a little bit harder with food because you tell half the patients, don't ever eat pizza again. And the other patients, you tell them, pizza's fine. But, you know, there's no way of having that really, really strict control. So one of the largest studies was the China study, where Dr. Colin Campbell went to China and actually looked at 6,500 different variables and took surveys of patients that we knew the mortality in those communities. And what he found, that a diet rich in fruits and vegetables, and it mainly a whole food plant-based diet, which we can talk about that more, but, you know, really a whole food plant-based diet and no processed food is really, really a way to start having a non-inflammatory diet.
Well, continue on that track of the whole food diet that you're talking about. Tammy, can you add to that?
So whole foods, and where science is, it's very difficult to study, as Dr. Chaudhry mentioned, it's very difficult to study diet. In whole foods, there are many, many, many nutrients. There are many components. For instance, fiber, different vitamins, different minerals that work in a synergistic effect with each other to produce wellness. Yeah. And it's difficult to study that because you also have individual people with individual body chemistries that interacts with. So what we do know is that from the studies is that those individuals who do eat mainly a whole food, unprocessed diet, their bodies do have less rates of inflammation, which leads to chronic disease. So we're talking about whole, unprocessed fruits and vegetables, more whole grains, plant-based proteins like beans, nuts, and so forth, limited amounts of meats. So according to the American Cancer Society, if you do eat meat and want to incorporate in that in your diet, to keep it to a minimum of about 18 ounces per week, and that will help keep that inflammatory level to a minimum.
So that can be any combination of red meat or white meat, or
it can.
Okay.
Yeah.
But better if you stay away from the red meat.
Correct.
Well, especially when you're talking about
correct
ways of preventing cancer and treating cancer.
Correct. Right.
Especially in colon cancer.
Yes.
So some of the other cancers, the debate is a little controversial, but colon cancer, we know, for instance, red meat is a bad thing.
I recently learned that whole grains can be kind of a tricky thing, Tammy, especially when it comes to labeling, because what you might think is a whole grain is not really a whole grain. And the example I came across was multigrain.
Yeah.
Isn't necessarily whole grain at all, is it?
Right. So the important thing is to look at the ingredient list. And if whole grain is listed as one of the first or second ingredients on that product, then by definition, it is supposed to have the most whole grain in that product. Some products actually, they'll say whole wheat.
But that's not whole grain, is it?
It is not whole grain. There is a difference.
It has to look what it looked like on the plant.
Yes.
So no processing. So my brother-in-law came over the other day and he said, well, if you cut up that apple, then that's processed because that's not what it looked like on the plant. I said, you're right. That is a form of that's true, but we're talking about highly processed food that resembles nothing like it did in the ground. And somebody else told me you should only eat, if your grandmother would not recognize it, don't eat it. So I don't know that's probably different application to different people, but you know I think whole grains is very, very tricky because I think marketing has really picked up on that, and they're trying to market things as whole grains that may not necessarily be whole grain, you know.
Now, Susie, you're dealing with broths and soups mainly, is that correct?
Right.
What else do you offer?
We do some salads. Today we did a shaved Brussels sprout salad just with lemon, extra virgin olive oil, pomegranate, and then sprinkled it with sunflower seeds. And it's an awesome.
I know, that sounds really good.
It was good, really good. We did a grilled eggplant salad today. Again, it's interesting because most of the things that we see coming through Kroger's and Pipkins and the places that are allowing us to rescue the produce is organic, and because it goes first, it doesn't have the preservatives sprayed on it and the pesticides on it. So from their standpoint, it looks the worst. So we just, you know, cut the little piece of darkness off or the wrinkle off, and you know what we're seeing really is mostly organic produce being donated.
How important is it to eat organic or as close to organic as you can get?
That's a great question. That's a question actually that I get asked quite frequently at the cancer center. When we look at conventional versus organic, conventional foods and organic foods have the same amounts of vitamins and minerals in them. So that's not really what we're looking at. What we're looking at are the levels of pesticides, the level of herbicides that are used on the crops of conventional items. We're also looking at, with organic foods, better sustainability of the soil and being better stewards of the earth. And there are some foods that are encouraged to purchase as organic. Rule of thumb is typically if it grows in the ground, because it has more exposure to those pesticides that are sprayed on, try to get it organic as much as possible. There's a list of on the internet, the Dirty Dozen, and if you can buy them organic, those are the ones that are recommended. The other thing that you really need to look out for, though, is, as Susie mentioned, I would recommend going to a grocery store that has a high turnover rate of organic produce. You know that if it turns over quickly, that it's going to be fresher. The longer something sits on the shelf, the more nutrients it's going to lose. So if you're looking at bang for your buck, look at the Dirty Dozen. Buy those organically if at all possible, but make sure that it's fresh organic.
I've heard of the Dirty Dozen list before. What are a few of the...
So a few of those are strawberries, mm-hmm. apples, celery...
Spinaches. Like leafy vegetables.
Yeah.
I don't remember the rest.
And they're called the Dirty Dozen because?
Because they have higher levels of pesticides. Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Reka, how important is, we're talking about diet and related to that, how important is controlling weight in fighting cancer?
Well, you know, we know in certain cancers that obesity is a problem. For instance, endometrial cancer, breast cancer. We know obese people have, you know, worse chance of recurring with their cancer. I think the bigger thing is we don't know is that because of the inflammatory foods that obese people tend to eat? Or is it the obesity itself? We don't really know that for a fact, but obviously if you're eating a whole food, low fat, plant-based diet, you know, a very healthy, fresh diet, you're gonna lose weight. So it's kind of a win-win situation.
What is it about being overweight that increases your cancer risk?
Well, in those particular cancers that I mentioned, breast cancer and endometrial mm-hmm. cancer, there's, you know, fat is a hormone processor. So it does process your hormones a little bit differently than if you didn't have that fat there. So, for instance, you may have increased levels of estrogen in obese people, mm-hmm. and then that can lead to increased risk of endometrial cancer.
Yeah, you know, as we talk about this, we have to realize that even people who maintain a healthy weight, have a healthy lifestyle, and eat appropriately, they still can get cancer,
right.
But at least if you do this, you're decreasing your risk, right?
Well, cancer has what's called a Knudsen two-hit hypothesis. It means you have to have two hits to get cancer. So the first hit may be genetic. So there's not, you know, I mean, there's not a lot. You can still get cancer and live a completely healthy lifestyle and have a genetic component to it. But then what we're trying to modify is the second hit, cigarette smoking, diet.
Alcohol.
You know, tobacco use in general, those kind of risk factors.
What about alcohol? If they drink, should they try to cut it out or limit themselves, or what's appropriate?
The American Cancer Society does recommend alcohol limits for men and women. For men, it is no more than, I believe it's 2 12-ounce glasses of beer per day. For women, it's 1 5-ounce glass of wine per day.
Okay.
Is the recommendation.
And the difference is because men are typically larger and can absorb more alcohol.
Correct.
Women being smaller.
Yep.
Okay.
And during chemotherapy, I mean, I usually recommend no alcohol at all. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's hard because people want to have a glass here and there, but especially because we're watching blood counts and the alcohol can affect your blood counts. So if they're having trouble with their blood counts during chemotherapy, I say, really, let's cut out the alcohol for just this period while you're undergoing.
And it's kind of like telling people to eat better and to eat more fresh fruits and vegetables, because there has to be a lot of confusion about what really constitutes a drink. For instance, you know, my friend has a 24-ounce beer, and you say, how many have you had? And he says, I've had one. That's not correct, though. Susie's laughing.
you must have heard that before, Susie.
Wine is plant-based.
That's right.
It is plant-based, but right. It's, you know, it's still grapes, you know.
But I think, what is the rule? 12 ounces of beer is a drink. 6 ounces of wine is 5 ounces is a drink. And then if it's a hard liquor, it's 1.5.
Yeah,
correct?
1.5. Mm-hmm. Okay. Milliliter, whatever the 1.5 ounces. Yeah.
Okay, but anything more than that is more than one drink. So that 24-ounce can, right, Susie, is definitely more
drinks.
Than
two
is
drinks.
Two drinks. When it comes to cancer risk, though, and alcohol, what's more important, the amount of alcohol or the type?
I mean, I don't know if there's any data to say that, because, you know, you said those drinks, although different amounts, 12 mm-hmm. ounces, 5 ounces, and 1.5, they have the same amount of alcohol in them. So if you have 6 beers versus 1 vodka tonic, I think that the 6 beers is worse, even though it doesn't seem like it is, but it probably is worse.
So probably paying attention to how much is just as important as what
right.
you're drinking, if you do happen to drink.
Right.
What is a healthy weight? How do I know if I'm at a healthy weight or not? You base that totally on BMI or the body mass index, or
as a dietitian, we don't look at BMI per se. BMI can be accurate for most individuals, but BMI really doesn't take into consideration those individuals that may really be working out a lot and have more muscle mass and weigh more because of that muscle mass. So we really have to look at and we have formulas that we use to figure an ideal body weight for folks, plus or minus 10% of a range. But we also look at an individual's usual body weight. There are a number of, especially men, that I help take care of who may have lower than that ideal body weight, but that's normal for them. And we find that out by just asking questions. How much have you weighed on average as an adult? So it does have to be individualized quite a bit.
Yeah, you see a lot of pitches for miracle foods. Are there certain foods that do have high health properties? Susie, maybe you can weigh in too. And Tammy, are there certain ones that are better than others?
I think that we discussed it on Monday evening was the turmeric. I would say definitely people are incorporating more and more turmeric into their diet. When you go to the grocery store, you actually see, it used to be you could only get it powdered, and now you're actually seeing the fresh root, the turmeric root. And, you know, the usual, like I say, the garlic, you can't go wrong.
Mm-hmm. Ginger.
The ginger that we spoke about. I would say those three. I mean, I do the dark. Actually, I just read an article last night about one of the big misnomers, that kale keeps getting this big shout out as the big super green.
Oh, that's what I've always heard.
Yeah.
My wife
says
that.
It's like number five in the greens.
What's number one?
It was collard greens.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And parsley was number two.
Okay, so collard greens, then parsley.
And then parsley. Spinach was above kale.
Okay. But kale came in at number five because my wife and I have always gone for this. It's the super
same
green.
Here. And you know, I just kind of laughed about it. So today, even for the kids that were trying to get a lot of nutrient in, I was like, well, we're just going to put a lot of parsley in it. It doesn't have the same effect, I think, that the kale that might not be as accepting to them, and I can chop it fine enough and know that I'm getting them the nutritional value.
And the turmeric, we talked about this Monday night. I mean, it doesn't really have a taste unless you add a lot of it to the food. So it's an easy thing to add into everything. The problem is that we talked about it stains everything.
Everything.
Mm-hmm. So if you're giving it to little kids, you know,
they're going to be yellow.
Yellow. You know, yellow nails when you're cooking with it. But, you know, it's interesting. The amount of turmeric you have to eat to make a difference is a significant amount.
Mm-hmm.
And so the reason they think that turmeric's been so effective in societies that use it is because they eat it for years and years, and almost every meal has a little bit of turmeric. So to go home and just pop, you know, 4 teaspoons of turmeric every night, I mean, I don't know if that's, I think it's just the consistent use of it in your diet.
It could also be, as we talked about, the synergistic effect of nutrients, the addition of turmeric with some of the other spices that are used in
black
that
pepper.
Particular.
So turmeric, one of the big problems with turmeric is it's not very well absorbed. Mm-hmm. And so if you are going to buy it in a supplement, which I don't recommend, but if you're going to buy it in a supplement, you should make sure that the supplement includes black pepper because it's not very well absorbed.
Susie, what does turmeric look like? How do you prepare it?
I say it looks like a ginger root
a
bit. It, you know, you would peel it down and much similar to how you would peel the ginger. And then we use it and grind it in the Cuisinart and then add it to the food that way or in the blender.
What about blueberries? Everybody always talks about how blueberries are a great antioxidant, a great cancer fighter. Is there any truth to that?
I'm glad you mentioned that. Yes, it's the color that's in the skins of blueberries. And not just blueberries, any kind of berry, a blackberry, raspberries, black raspberries, any kind of food that has brightly colored skins, red bell peppers, are very, very healthy in terms of the antioxidant protective factor in prevention of cancer.
Yep. Again, you're better off going with the organic, if at all possible, right?
Yes.
On those.
Yep.
Rekha, this was part of a a series that UC has started about different health issues, right? And this was the first one. What is coming up next in that series? So you have something coming up March 4th?
Am I the next person? Okay.
I think you.
So I am the next person. So mine is the next talk is on supplements. So this one on Monday was just on lifestyle changes, exercise, counseling, seeking stress relief, diet, those kind of things. And then March 4th is really focused on supplements and what it does for cancer.
But lifestyle changes, as we're trying to point out here, can make a significant difference, right? Both in prevention and treatment.
You know, I brought up a study that I find really, really fascinating. And this is one of the most interesting studies to me ever. They had 10,000 people, not patients, like you and I, take the MMPI, which is the Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory. And they separated people into pessimistic people and optimistic people based on that personality inventory. Well, 20 years later, they looked at the people who developed lung cancer. So about 500 of those patients, 500 of those people became lung cancer patients. And then they looked at their separation based on optimism and pessimism, and the optimists had a survival benefit. So it's every little thing we do, part of our lifestyle, just how we approach road rage may have an effect.
Very well. Thank you, Dr. Chaudhry and Tammy and Susie. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Dr. Rekha Chaudhry, who is an assistant professor in the Department of Internal Medicine, Division of Hematology Oncology at the University of Cincinnati. Tammy Ward, a registered dietitian and specialist in oncology nutrition for the UC Cancer Institute. And Susie DeYoung, head chef and owner of La Soupe. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's program is Pete Reitmeier. The technical director was Bruce Ellis. Stay tuned for Here and Now next on 91.7 WVXU.